Donald Trump, Benjamin Netanyahu, Israel, Iran, the United States. We've got it covered today right here.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to The Line of Fire on this thoroughly Jewish Thursday. This is Michael Brown. I am delighted to be with you. Boy, a whole lot to talk about once again. In just under 2 weeks, President Trump is scheduled to meet with Prime Minister Netanyahu, and I can assure you that the tone and spirit will be different than many of the meetings and interactions between President Obama and Prime Minister Netanyahu, their relationship famously icy at different times. It seems things are off to a very different start. In fact, Prime Minister Netanyahu actually had to apologize to Mexico because he was commending President Trump for the idea of building a wall and said it's helped greatly with security in Israel, which would then give you the impression that the people of Mexico are like the terrorists trying to come in from Gaza or the West Bank. So we had to clarify that. But a whole lot more solidarity. Israel now building more settlements and not a word out of the White House and condemnation. So things changing in that regard. And President Trump facing down Iran for what we say is a violation of our agreement with them regarding testing of warheads and things like that. So a lot of interesting things going on. You are listening to The Line of Fire on our Thursday broadcast, which is dedicated to Jewish-related issues, Israel-related issues, which means if you have a Jewish-related call of any kind, be it a Hebrew question, be it a question about messianic prophecy, be it a question about the modern state of Israel, be it a question about Jewish beliefs and traditions, be it why Jewish people don't believe in Jesus, or if you're a Jewish person and you don't believe that Jesus, Yeshua, is the Messiah, by all means, give me a call, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884, and I'd love to take your call. In the second hour today, if you don't get that on your local radio stations, just go to thelineoffire.org and click on Listen Live, or download the Ask Dr. Brown app. It is available on Android phones, and any day will be available for Apple. So that's ASKDR Brown. Download the app and just click on The Line of Fire to listen. You can listen on your cell phone. The second hour, I'm going to be speaking with a Jewish believer in Jesus who is a black Jewish man, but is not part of the black Hebrew Israelite sect or cult. But he is an expert on these different groups, and he's going to be talking about who the different groups are, what they believe, and how to reach out. So by all means, do your best to listen to the second hour, or after the show, just go to thelineoffire.org and you can catch the entire broadcast there. I was asked a question at a staff luncheon where I'm ministering in Cary, North Carolina this week, met with their church staff over lunch. And I was asked a question about, as a Jewish person coming to faith, did that give me more insights into the scriptures and into the faith than, say, a Gentile would have just coming into the faith? I said, you got to understand, I was not raised in a traditional Jewish home, number one. If I had been, I probably wouldn't have been shooting heroin at the age of 15. So I got saved like any pagan, like any heathen, like any worldly person, like any non-believer would be saved. I didn't come with special insights because I was Jewish. And if I had come from a traditional Jewish home, then of course I would be reading things through a particular lens, seeing things from a particular viewpoint, and it would be only by the Holy Spirit's grace that I would then have insight into the Messiahship of Jesus or things like that. So there can be insight that we have as Jews, but don't assume it's some automatic thing. If you're Jewish, you must have more spiritual insight into the scriptures. Don't assume that.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on this Clearly Jewish Thursday. Oh, you got to love this. You got to love this. We have put together a new video. It's the first in a series called Instant Insight with Dr. Michael Brown. Instant Insight. It is 1 minute long, and that's the goal for these videos, to be roughly 1 minute long with special animation. And I'm more excited about this video than I think any video we've put out so far. Or it's right at the top of the list among others, if not my absolute favorite. 1 minute long, Instant Israel, Instant Insight on the regathering of Israel. The regathering of Israel. You'll love the animation. It really helps you follow the points. And it just got posted a few minutes ago, and already the critics are weighing in, attacking the logic, attacking the argument. Of course, they've never had a counter-argument. I've waited for years for their counter-argument. I've not heard it yet. I've presented it in debates. I've presented it in social media. I've presented it on radio, therefore, to millions of people. And not once have I gotten anything close to a coherent biblical response to this. So it's easy for people to say, oh, it's just stupid or wrong, but they haven't provided a legitimate answer yet, a legitimate response. So check this out. It is our latest video. And let me just confirm right here, looking on, let's see where you can best see it. Tell you what, if you just go to the Ask Dr. Brown website, askdrbrown.org, just click on Digital Library. Let me make sure that comes up as the number one. There we go, the regathering of Israel. Or the same, you just go to lineoffire.org, click on Digital Library, and you'll see it as the latest video, the regathering of Israel. Watch it, share it with your friends, and by all means, add your comments on YouTube. A couple of neat things coming your way in terms of Jewish ministry, things we're involved with. God willing, in March, the third week of March, March 23rd, I believe it is, at Kennesaw State University in Georgia, so outside of Atlanta, I will be debating a Jewish lawyer, Asher Norman, who is known for his book on 26 Reasons Jews Don't Believe in Jesus. So we will be debating this very issue. Is Jesus the Jewish Messiah? You say, I don't live around there. No problem. It will be live streamed. It will be live streamed. So we'll be giving you more details on that. A free live stream where you can watch the debate. Also, God willing, sometime in March, don't know exactly when because things are incredibly busy. We've got our Israel tour before then as well. But a counter-missionary rabbi, a man that I consider a friend, whom I deeply respect, we have interacted in different ways for years now, for on and off in different ways for about 15 years. And we have agreed that the best thing we can do in terms of educating the public and reaching out to our Jewish people is to each put out a video at the same time, a 20-minute video, on the role of the Messiah according to the Scriptures. So we both release our video at the same time on our respective YouTube channels. And then at a designated time after, it could be 1 month later, again, we just have to be able to schedule things in a way that works for both of us, we'll put out a rebuttal to the other one's video. And then maybe 1 month later, we'll have to agree on the time, we'll put out a rebuttal to the rebuttal. So you will have three consecutive 20-minute videos where I present my views as a Messianic Jew, as a Jewish follower of Jesus, and this counter-missionary rabbi presents his views, and then we interact with one another's videos by way of rebuttal, and then we just put those up for you to see. And if it goes well, if there's enough interest, if we feel good about it, then there's always the potential that we'll then focus in on specific subjects and go from there. But I'm so pleased to be able to do that. He's wanted to do debates with me in writing, but my schedule doesn't permit a lengthy interaction of writing over a period of what would be many months, I think. I've said, let's just do a sit-down debate and offered many different formats, but he wasn't comfortable with that, preferring to have the ability to step back, think about the arguments, and think about how to respond. But as it turns out, we've agreed on this format, and I'm really pleased with it. He's pleased with it. So we'll give you more details, but we've got some great opportunities beginning in the month of March to be laying out on the table for the world to see with a qualified Jewish spokesperson debating the issue, why we believe Jesus is the Jewish Messiah. So pray that truth and light would triumph and that God's power, God's anointing, God's favor, God's grace would back his truth. So as those people study, Jewish people study the issues, look at the scriptures, that they would have help from the Lord, that they'd study with heart and mind together. 866-348-7884. Let's go to the phones. We'll start in Massachusetts. Jim, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Yes, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Okay. I was just wondering, when the good Lord comes back, if how would the Jewish people that were to be saved, that their eyes are opened, respond to that as a first or second coming? Or just a comment on that.
Yes, sir. Jim, there is a joke that's often told that when the Messiah comes, that Jewish people will ask him, is this your first time here, or is this your second time here? Of course, it's a lighthearted joke, but it's a tremendously serious issue. Yes. On the one hand, traditional Jews today would tell you to their dying breath that Jesus is not our Messiah and will never be our Messiah. That's what they understand. That's what they believe. But as I understand Scripture, Jim, there will be a national turning of the Jewish people. Zechariah 12 speaks of it when they look on him whom they pierced. Jeremiah 31:1 speaks of it. At that time, God will be God of all the families of Israel. Romans 11:26 speaks of it, where Paul says that all Israel will be saved. So I believe at the end of this age, there will be a national turning, which would mean that our people would be calling on the Messiah to come and would have their eyes open to recognize Jesus as the Messiah. And the exact sequence of events, how it happens, obviously that's known to God. We can debate exactly what Scripture says. But I believe that hearts will be turned, that there will be this extraordinary recognition that the one that we thought was the cause and source of so many of our problems, the one that we attributed to anti-Semitism in church history and connected with a foreign religion and was the source of crusades and inquisitions and paved the way for the Holocaust and things like that, that we'd suddenly realize that the real Jesus was actually our Messiah, that he's been misrepresented and misunderstood by others, and that hearts will be open to that. Now, Jim, that being said, there are a handful of religious Jews in Israel. There's one gentleman in particular leading the way on this, urging the Jewish nation and religious Jews to recognize Jesus as what's called the Messiah, son of Joseph. A traditional Judaism holds that, and not all traditional Jews believe this, but many do, that there will be two messianic figures at the end of the age. The Messiah, son of Joseph, who will be a mighty warrior, but who will die in battle in the last great war. And the Messiah, son of David, who will actually raise Messiah, son of Joseph from the dead. And then the Messiah, son of David, is the Messiah who will fulfill all of the messianic prophecies and will ultimately usher in that age of peace and God's glory on the earth that we all long to see. And this, there's one traditional Jew in particular who's leading a movement in Israel to get Jesus recognized as the Messiah, son of Joseph. I don't know where he stands in terms of his actual faith and understanding, but he's trying to say that we did the wrong thing in rejecting him, that the Jewish court did the wrong thing in rejecting him, that we should recognize him as the suffering Messiah. And perhaps that's his way of getting Jews to see that he fulfills the roles of Messiah, son of Joseph, and Messiah, son of David. So perhaps there'll be some rising move among religious Jews before Jesus returns that will start to open their hearts and minds more and more as to who he is. It's certainly something that I pray for, that God would do. And then when he does come, the reality that the one that we rejected, the one that we thought was the head of this foreign hostile religion, is actually our Messiah and King. That's why the repentance will be so deep, the mourning will be so deep. Picture that you had somebody wrong for many, many, many years only to find out that they were your friend and your advocate. Hey, thank you for the question, Jim. Let's continue to pray for God's grace to be poured out on the House of Israel worldwide. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on The Line of Fire on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884 is the number to call. Hey, I've got a question for you, and it's based on the Torah portion of the week that'll be read in synagogues across the world this Shabbat, this Saturday. Got a question for you. The Torah portion, Parashat Bo, is from the book of Exodus, and it has to do with the culmination of the 10 plagues on Egypt and God freeing his people. The institution of the Passover is there as well. And then the portion from, the prophetic books that's read is from the book of Jeremiah in the 46th chapter, where it's a prophecy about Egypt's demise. Just a quick question for you. Did you see the movie, what's it called, Of Kings and Gods? Was that the name of it? It was a modern movie about the Exodus. I believe the producer or director was more atheistic than anything in terms of his own beliefs. Did you see the movie? If so, what'd you think of it? Just curious, 866-348-7884. Did you see the movie, the modern version of the Exodus? Again, I think the name was Of Kings and Gods. If you saw it, what did you think of it? Give me a call. I'm curious to know. I started watching it during one international flight where you have hours and hours. You know, you're flying, maybe you do some reading, maybe do some writing, do whatever you're doing, and then chill for a while and try to find some wholesome entertainment. So I started watching it, and I watched it for a while, and it didn't really go too far in the time I was watching it. I guess it's quite a setup before you get to the whole Exodus scene and the miracles or not miracles, depending on how this director portrayed them. But I won't say more about my impressions, but just curious if you did see it. What did you think? 866-348-7884. A quick word about our president, about Donald Trump. Like him or not, number one, he is doing things he promised he would do if elected. He is doing that. People he's appointing, stands that he's taking, he is doing things he promised he would do. A lot of people, it's campaign rhetoric. When it comes to relocating the American embassy in Israel to Jerusalem, I read the transcript of one CNN commentator, one that I quoted it, played the clip on the air, I believe. But his position was, yeah, every president talks about it. Everybody talks about it, but nobody actually does it. We talk about it, we don't do it. What seems that things that he talked about, he is doing. He's doing. And in point of fact, that's scaring a lot of people. And right now, when it comes to Iran and Iran testing a warhead, they're not supposed to be doing that according to our agreement with them. And they're saying, oh, yeah, you're going to face us down. And Trump's saying, yeah, we're going to face you down. The world does need to see this. You say that, oh, the saber rattling, it's going to cause a war. No, you don't allow a terrorist nation or a nation that sponsors terrorism to violate already a miserable agreement that we made with them. You don't allow them to just go on and challenge you. So it's right to face them down. They've got no business doing what they're doing. according to everything I understand. So, yeah, Donald Trump hopefully will have wisdom and use diplomacy in dealing with other nations. And is he going to make rookie mistakes? I assume so. That's why we pray for him. But and any new president, better chance of rookie mistakes, especially when they're as aggressive as Donald Trump is. But you better believe, number one, he's living up to promises he made far more than any president I can remember, far more quickly. That's one. And two, he does need to stand up to our enemies. I believe he does. 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, we go to the Bronx, New York. Karen, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Yes, Dr. Brown, thank you for taking my call. I just have a simple translation problem. I know you're a Hebrew scholar, but it's in Job. It's 31:38-40, and it conveys that Job was involved in some kind of agricultural enterprise, a sharecropping enterprise. But the different transcribers make the connotation sort of oppositional. Like in one way, he's seen as the owner, okay, of this land, and he's sort of renting it out to tenants. And the other, on the other translation, it seems that he's a tenant. So I was wondering, in your knowledge and your expertise, is that translation, is it a tenant? Is the word tenant or owner?
I'll tell you exactly how I translated it. This hasn't been released yet, but my translation of Job will be part of my commentary. Let's see, beginning in verse 38, if my land cries out against me, or its furrows weep together, if I have eaten its produce without payment and caused the spirit of its owners to groan, let it yield thorns rather than wheat and stinking weeds rather than barley. So this is the end of his oath. Then let these things happen. The words of Job are ended. It's obviously his land, and the question would be his payment of workers, his not paying for land that someone else owned. He was clearly the land owner. He was the wealthiest man in the East and the greatest man in the East, according to the testimony of the early part of Job, and then that's reiterated throughout the book in terms of the former greatness that he had before the calamities came on him. So certainly he's the land owner, and payments would have been not payment to the land for someone else, but rather paying hired workers, things like that. If he had failed to do that, then let these curses come on him. That would be, to me, the fairly obvious understanding of the text there.
Then what would they... So what's the proper translation? Is it tenant or owner?
Well, what word specifically are you talking about?
I'm talking about, it says, one translation, it says, embittered the soul of its owner. Another translation says, it broken the spirit of its tenants, and some other translation.
Okay, got it. Verse 39. Mm-hmm.
How would you read that in the Hebrew?
Got it. Yeah, okay. It is owners. The Hebrew does say owners. So if I have eaten its produce without payment and made its new Jewish Publication Society says rightful owners to spare. Got it. So in this case, you would look at Job. It could be hiring out land or owning land that others have had. Certainly, yeah, and sorry for taking so long to understand the specific question about that one specific part of the verse. The Hebrew be'aleha simply does mean it's owners, it's masters, so that if Job then theoretically had these large swaths of land that other people may have owned under him, and he took advantage of them in any way, that would be what's spoken of. But because of the ambiguity, since Job is the overall owner, and yet the Hebrew does speak of owners, some would say tenants and some would say owners. But best way to translate it would be owners. Let's just see again how I render that. If my land cries out against me, its furrows weep together. If I've eaten its produce without payment, cause the spirit of its owners to groan. So translate with owners in that context.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I just want to take one more stab at bringing clarity if I confused any issues here. Karen, your question about Job 31. The Hebrew word clearly, means owners. However, in context, some translated tenants because they were owners under Job. That would be the way that we understand this, that Job had these large swaths of land, that there were people then who were given oversight over this land, responsibility over it, or perhaps they owned the land originally, and now Job said, okay, I'm buying all these lands, but you develop them. So they were owners under him, you could say, hence tenants. And he said, if I defrauded any of them, if I didn't pay them properly, then let my land yield nothing whatsoever. That's the point that he's making. So hopefully we clarified that for you. And thank you for asking. In my commentary, I do deal with the nuances of the words, but didn't get into a further explanation of that. 866-34-TRUTH. Yeah, so if you saw the movie of Kings and Gods, the Exodus movie, the modern Exodus movie, I think it was a big production, a lot of money from Hollywood. It certainly was not a big hit among believers. If you saw it, let me know what you thought. We'll start in Washington, D.C. Anthony, thanks for calling the Line of Fire. What were your thoughts about the movie?
I'm so sorry. Let me just pull over here. I don't want to talk on the phone while I'm on the... Okay.
All right, sure
thing. I just want to say, I don't like these movies because, I really hate how they've changed the identity of the people who were key figures during the biblical times. I don't think, Christianity would have, I don't know what would have happened if the true identity and the people in Ethiopia, they're the same as they were during biblical times. They're people of color. And all these movies, Kristen Bell played Moses one time. I mean, he's an Irishman. These people were indigenous to regions where the people were dark. And during the time of Pharaoh, they were even darker. And Moses was able to live in Pharaoh's house for 40 years, and he thought it was his grandson. So I don't understand why they've changed the identity. I do know why, because it's impossible to oppress a people and then worship them at the same time, worship somebody that looks like them at the same time. I'm offended, by right now, the Jewish people who are in Israel. They are Europeans. They're Gentiles that converted to
Anthony, so Hitler wiped out 6 million of my people by mistake?
No, sir. They were Jewish. They were absolutely Jewish, but they're not the biblical Hebrews. They converted. You're descendants of the Khazar kingdom in Europe.
No, sir. The Khazar kingdom was a tiny, tiny little group in terms of the overall history of the Jewish people.
That's the lie that's out there. It was a large kingdom.
Anthony, I agree with you. That you shouldn't just have Caucasian actors. We agree that Moses was not Caucasian. Anthony, I know my history pretty well. I know the history of our people. There has been intermarriage over the centuries, but we are not the descendants of the Khazars. Our DNA goes back to Israel in the Middle East, sir.
Well, I'm going to tell you like this, and this is I know better. The Hebrews that were in Israel during the time of Jesus were dark people. And the Khazars are, converted to Judaism. Can we agree on that?
There's a little group of people over in the overall history of the Jewish people. Anthony, there's a little group of people in the overall history of the Jewish people that were converts from the Khazar kingdom, a tiny amount in terms of the overall history of the Jewish people. That's it. The vast majority do not go back to them. And the original Israelites were not black. They were darker than me, lighter than you, presumably. These are facts, sir.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know what frustrates me, to be totally candid? It's not that someone has a different point of view, but that someone insists that their point of view is the only factual point of view, and that I and everybody else is aware of that, whereas the facts are that they hold a tiny, tiny, tiny minority view, that the vast, 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 vast majority of qualified scholars in the field would utterly reject. And it's presented as if, well, everybody knows it. Everybody knows that Barack Obama was Chinese and was the 83rd president of the United States. No, we don't know that, because he wasn't Chinese and he wasn't the 83rd president of the United States. And just be perfectly candid, that's what bothers me. Not that someone says that they believe Moses was black or Jesus was black. And as to the skin color, it's utterly immaterial. Ultimately, in terms of reality, whatever was, and let it be. Okay? We agree that Moses was not Caucasian. We agree that Jesus was not Caucasian. At least we agree on that. And you can understand, as Jewish people have lived in all different parts of the world over the centuries, if people have intermarried with them and have intermarried into Judaism. So let's say I was a Middle Eastern Jewish man living in Europe, and a woman converted to Judaism and married me, all right, and she was European, then our kids would be a mix of Middle Eastern and European. And over a period of time, if there was more intermarriage from European culture, then you would have more and more of that appearance, so that you'll have Jews in India and Jews in China and Jews in Africa, Jews in Europe, who end up taking on the characteristics of the people around them because of people converting into Judaism. Remember, if I, as a Middle Eastern Jew living in Europe, assimilated into the society and maybe converted to Catholicism or something like that and intermarried there, then over the generations, there'd be no trace of me among the Jewish people anymore. You follow? We would have thoroughly assimilated. So you have people intermarrying in that respect, intermarrying into Judaism, become part of the Jewish people. So there's obviously been a lot of intermarriage. Otherwise, we wouldn't have the characteristics of all these different countries in which we live. But when we look at ancient Egypt, we can see that they were a darker-skinned people. You could say brown skin versus black skin, as, say, for example, a modern Saudi Arabian or modern Yemenite or something like that. They'd be darker skinned than a Caucasian, lighter skin than an African. We can see that readily, or say in modern Egypt today, it would be the same thing. And you have iconography, you have inscriptions with pictographs and things like that, and pictures where you see the Egyptians of brown skin with their Nubian slaves who were black skin. And then even in the depiction, sometimes skin color had certain social meaning, and that could vary in terms of the depiction. But not only so, there have been excavations, done archaeological excavations of grave sites and things like that. And even the skull size of the black Africans, and from what we could tell from that, was different than those of the indigenous Egyptians. So again, I'm all for recognizing darker skin color than in those movies. And yeah, there was criticism of the Kings and Gods movie, and I would agree with our last caller that it was all these guys are Caucasian. So what, you know, there's you're throwing out, you know, any semblance of accuracy in doing that. But that's, of course, an aside in terms of the larger issue that I was asking about the movie. So anyway, 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Roger in Rockville, Maryland. If you saw the movie of Kings and Gods, what was your thought?
It was horrid.
Yeah, explain.
Oh, okay. Well, everything about the movie was just basically, it was a lie. I mean, they showed God. They had the Almighty himself depicted as a child, and a petulant one at that, a bloodthirsty, petulant child. I mean, really. And then Moses is the one that is acting like he's the mediator between trying to save the Egyptians or whatever, or trying to calm God down, who is basically wanting to kill everything. You know, that's the impression that I got.
Yeah, the reviews I read of it were largely negative. And when I watched it, it was taking forever to get where it was going, but it was clear it was not going to be the supernatural movie that the scripture described, that whatever was being presented was going to be presented in a very humanistic way. Even God speaking to Moses and all of this, and it was going to be through humanistic eyes. And
I think it was more than humanistic eyes. I think the intent of it was basically to show, to embarrass Christians or people of the Christian faith. I think that's what it was designed for.
Yeah, how so? I'm not disputing at all, but how so?
How so? Well, just as I mentioned before, they showed God in such a light as, they showed him as, they depicted him as a petulant little child that's throwing tantrums here and there.
Yep.
And
yep.
This is the thing that they're doing for Christians or people or even Messianic Jews and everything. God is love. God is the ultimate expression of love. And yet they're making him out looking like he is something, some bloodthirsty thing, you know?
Got it. Yeah. Great observations, Roger. And it's such a shame. If you can, if those are your views, then don't do a movie on the thing.
Exactly. I mean, there was a lot of creative license taken with that movie. And of course, there is creative licenses with all movies, but usually when they do biblical movies, they do it in good taste, so to speak. Like, for example, The Prince of Egypt, for example. The Prince of Egypt was done very well, and there are certain little nuances that did not happen. Like, for example, in The Prince of Egypt, when God actually moved between them and the Egyptians when they were at the Red Sea, The Prince of Egypt actually showed fire coming out of the water and then moving over, but that's not
right.
Exactly
right. Yeah. And so, yeah, Nat, you are right, Roger, that with any of these Hollywood movies, virtually all of them are going to take some creative liberty, some creative license. And we understand that they were going to fill in the blanks, or sometimes they just think, boy, let's put a little literary flourish in this and add something. And I always think personally that just do it the biblical way. It's dynamic and dramatic enough. But this, Roger, you're 100% right. This goes way beyond creative license. This is a rewriting of the Bible and a rewriting of the God of the Bible. So, read the text in Scripture as synagogues will read around the world this weekend. That's the reality. That's what really happened. And it's staggering. It is staggering. And staggering God's commitment to his people Israel. Roger, thank you for weighing in. Much appreciated. 866-34-TRUTH. We go to John in New Jersey. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hello, Dr. Brown. Pleasure to speak with you. You are a tremendous resource for a person like me who is trying to share with Jewish people and Orthodox Jewish people specifically. And the Lord has opened up some doors for me to be in conversations with them. So one of my questions, or my main question to you today is, if I were to sit down with them and have a conversation with them and show them some of the messianic prophecies, they would first off, I imagine, want to see it in the Hebrew language as opposed to me showing them my English translation. So I'd like what I'm shooting for is to have a scripture in front of me which has the Hebrew and the English side by side, where the Hebrew has not been tainted so as to make it difficult for quote-unquote, the missionary to render their messianic prophecy the way we would like it to be rendered. So I know there's our scroll and a few others. What are your thoughts on, or what would be your recommendation?
Yeah, first thing, John, thanks for the kind words, and I'm glad that we're able to be of help to you. No one's changing the Hebrew. In other words, everybody's using the same Hebrew text. Christian translators, Jewish translators, everybody's using the same Hebrew text. So if you have Hebrew side by side with the English, we'll all have the same Hebrew text. The question is, what is the English text going to say? And if you have a side-by-side, Hebrew on one side, English on the other, like Art Scroll, or like the New Jewish Publication Society version called the Tanakh, if you have those side-by-side, the Jewish translation is going to reflect the Jewish interpretation and Jewish understanding. And in some cases, that will be different than the Christian translation and the Christian understanding. So I would say, hey, tell them look it up in the Hebrew, but use the Tree of Life version. The Tree of Life version, it's by Jewish believers in Jesus, but with Jewish sensitivities. The Tree of Life version, and tell them to compare it to the Hebrew.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday on the Line of Fire. Let's go to Frank in Florida. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Oh, well, hello, Dr. Brown. How are you?
Doing well, thanks.
Appreciate you taking my call. I just had a question as far as, you know, the thoughts of the Jewish people today. In other words, if I was to ask an Orthodox Jewish rabbi, does he feel like the promises made to Abraham have been fulfilled to his people? What would you say?
Certainly not. If he's a traditional Jew, he believes that the ultimate promises to Abraham are for the full inheritance of the land and Israel dwelling in the land blessed right. by God. And even ultimately, the coming of the Messiah and the establishing of the right. Messianic kingdom. Mm-hmm. So they
what
would
about
see
making
the prom-
his seed more numerous than the stars of heaven and the sands of the sea.
Well, they would see that there has been that obviously is. Great growth of the numbers of the people of Israel since the time of Abraham. But on the flip side, the people of Israel, the Jewish people, we are as old as the people of China and the people of India. You know, roughly as civilizations, and yet right. each of those have well over 1 billion people, and we have maybe 13, 14 million Jews. Right. So I would say that there would be far more expectation in terms of God doing greater things ahead based on the promises to the patriarchs.
What
and these provide kind of
nations?
The foundation for the rest of the prayers of redemption that traditional Jews pray every day.
Well, what about, you know, Abraham's name itself? I mean, you know, when God changed it from Abram to Abraham, he said, because I'm going to make you the father of many nations. How would they react to that?
They would recognize that Abraham is spiritually the father of the three monotheistic faiths, Judaism and Christianity and Islam. But they would still see the many nations primarily as the growth of the people of Israel worldwide. They do believe
that the
fulfillment...
But that's only one nation, Dr. Brown.
I'm simply answering a question.
Okay.
Yeah. Simply answering how a traditional Jewish person would see it. That okay. nations could just mean, you know, the many peoples, the tribes of Israel, almost as being as nations in themselves. They would understand Genesis 12, where it says, and this is repeated, that in you all nations will be blessed. They would understand it, through your seed all nations would be blessed. They would understand the Hebrew, and it's a legitimate understanding to say that all nations will bless themselves through you, so that the traditional Jewish view is that all the nations of the world will say, may God make our seed like Abraham's seed, may God make our people like Abraham's people. So there would have to be a greater exaltation of the people of Israel worldwide for that to be fulfilled, that the whole world would say, may our nation, may our people be like the people of Israel. Hey, Frank, I appreciate your question and your probing. Thank you. 866-34-TRUTH. We go to Jay in Virginia. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, Mike, I wanted to comment on, or rather wanted your comment on this mass eviction of Jews in the West Bank. I don't hear the media talking about it. And I'm just outraged that it seems like you know, this position where the Jewish people or Netanyahu feels an obligation to pull people out of, I don't know, years-old settlements.
Well, where is he doing that? What specifically are you referring to?
Like that. What's going on with that?
Are you still there?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah. So I'm not sure what eviction you're talking about, because Israel is building more settlements in the West Bank and looking to build up the Jewish population in Hebron, for example, with new settlements. So I'm not sure what eviction you're talking about.
Like two ago, I got looking on the internet, and there was a mass eviction of 500 to 600 Jewish people from the West Bank, and I haven't seen anything else on it. I didn't see anything on the news. All I saw it was on, I don't want to give these people a plug, but I saw it on a mainstream, website. And I said, I haven't even seen this. And it's just, they said 500 to 600 Jewish people were being evicted out of their houses. And there were protests. And the Israeli soldiers or the IDF or police or something were evicting these people, and you haven't seen anything about that?
Yeah, the only thing I'm looking at, there have been some outposts of Jewish people in certain parts of the West Bank that have been fraught with controversy, where there have been acts of violence. Sometimes the Jewish settlers have engaged in acts of violence, and the military here and there may have evicted people, but this is what is happening is quite the opposite, that thousands and thousands of Jewish people are living in the West Bank. It's now several hundred thousand through the settlements. And there's nothing taking place like what took place in Gaza, 12 years ago, when the entire Jewish population of Gaza, thousands of Jews who had lived there for years, were forcefully evicted under Ariel Sharon, under pressure from the United States. And of course, that then opened up the floodgates of Hamas taking over there and just turning into a terrorist outlet. So when I look online, for example, for eviction of Jews from West Bank, you find here and there, January 22nd, Israeli troops evict Jewish settlers from West Bank homes. For example, that was in Hebron. There would be some type of dispute that would lead to that. Were the properties purchased legally or not, or things like that. Or some acts of violence that required it. But otherwise, sir, it's quite the opposite. Jews are not being evicted from the West Bank. Jews are being settled, growing settlements in the West Bank, Judea, Samaria, which is part of the big controversy. So this is not some widespread thing happening. Be assured it's quite the opposite. There are Jewish settlements being built, and that's what the outrage is over. And apparently President Trump is fine with it, and President Obama was not. President Bush was not either. Hey, thank you for the call. Glenda in New York, we've just got a minute, but if I can help you with your question, go for it.
Hello?
Are you there?
Yes. Am I on the phone?
You're on the air, but we've only got a matter of seconds. If you could throw your question out.
Yes, that's Mark Brown. My question is, my brother is having a hard time because when he studied the word Holy Spirit, he says it translates in Hebrew as breath of God. So now when we read the King James Version, he's having a hard time understanding,
just jump in. The Hebrew word ruach means spirit or breath or wind, depending on the context. Just like the Greek word pneuma, the Greek word pneuma can mean breath or wind or spirit, depending on the context. So where the Bible's talking about the Spirit of God, then that's what it's talking about, the Spirit of God being on the prophets. It wasn't the wind of God. But in certain ways, they're interchangeable. You can debate the meaning in Genesis 1 here and there, but otherwise, Hebrew ruach can mean breath, wind, or spirit, depending on the context. Hey, friends, my bottom line, let us pray for the salvation of the Jewish people. It is very, very dear to God's heart. We're about to take you into the world of the Black Hebrew Israelites.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
He is my defense, I shall not be moved. He is my
welcome, defense. Friends, to The Line of Fire. It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. 866-348-7884 is the number to call. In a few minutes, I'm going to introduce a special guest. He was on The Line of Fire with us last year, Sar Shaharat Maaseyahu, and he's going to talk to us about the Black Hebrew Israelite cult. If you believe that the original Hebrews were Black Africans and that salvation is not available to the white man, if you believe that Jesus was something other than the Savior of the world or divine Son of God and have some of these other beliefs tied in, we're going to sort these things out. We may even take some calls from those that would say, yeah, that's me, I'm a Hebrew Israelite, a Black Hebrew Israelite. We may take some calls, but we're going to open the subject up. It's one that, in the last few years, we got increasing numbers of questions about. That somehow this has been spreading more in the inner cities, somehow this has been taking root in other parts of the country, and is not as obscure, fringe, minority view. It's as off-base view as ever. It's as wrong view as ever. It is as unscriptural a view and a historically incorrect view as ever. However, it's spread more and more. The deception has caught on more and more. So we're going to go in depth and talk about the different groups, talk about what they believe, talk about how to reach out to these folks. And tonight is my last night in Cary, North Carolina, right outside of Raleigh. I can't remember the last time I was in the same church for a five-day period, but we got a request to come. I guess a year ago, they were starting the year with 21 days of prayer and fasting and hungering for God to come in revival, and asked if I would come and speak, and just felt I was supposed to do it. So I've been doing live radio from here every day, and then the services at night. Tonight's the last night, but I mention it not just for folks living in the area to join me at Cary Church of God at 7 o'clock tonight, but I'm going to be talking about the importance of reaching Jewish people with the gospel. In fact, we'll be receiving a special offering to help with Jewish outreach ministry tonight. That's something that very few ministries are directly involved with, very few churches are directly involved with. So by all means, we want to support missions work around the world and share the gospel with everyone. And the vast majority of grads that have gone out from our ministry school that are on the mission field around the world are not focusing on Jewish outreach. They're reaching the particular nations where they are, but they have a heart for the salvation of Israel. So if you're anywhere in the area, by all means, join us tonight. And I think you'll find it to be an eye-opening time and a blessed time in the presence of the Lord together. Also, I'm really excited to announce that our first ever Instant Insight with Dr. Michael Brown video is now online on YouTube, just 1 minute long with great animation, where I explain why the regathering of Israel today is a divine event and not a human event. And even some of the attacking, mocking comments in response to the video, which just went up a couple of hours ago, further confirmed the rightness of the position. Because when people mock without substance, you think, I guess they didn't have a coherent answer. So check it out. Go to thelineoffire.org, click on Digital Library. And you'll see it as the latest video, The Regathering of Israel. And then share it with a friend. Get it out to as many as you can.
Fire we want, for fire we please.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, in the first hour today, I happen to mention the Torah portion for the week that will be read in synagogues around the world this Shabbat, and mentioned the exodus from Egypt in that context and the 10 plagues and things like that. And asked folks if they had seen the movie of Kings and of Gods and what their impression was, a modern adaptation of the Exodus story, and a really secular humanist approach. And the first caller called in and said he was really offended by it because they had all Caucasians playing key roles. And of course, that's not historically accurate. But he said, of course, I know that I'm only a convert to Judaism, from the Khazar tribe, etc., and that all the original Jews were black. And so it got us in a whole discussion that I didn't plan to get on, but it ties in directly with the question today of a cult, of a sect that is called the Hebrew Israelites or Black Hebrew Israelites. Who are they? What's the difference between them and, say, an Ethiopian Jew, an African Jew who has a historic claim to being a Jew? What's the difference there? A few months ago, I was introduced to a gentleman who's got a unique background and really specialized in these issues for a number of years, Sar Shaharat Masayahu. He has over 19 years of successful experience as a history social science instructor and instructional coach, and he's got a tremendous amount of information about the Hebrew Israelites or the Black Hebrew Israelites. So we wanted to bring him back on to give us further background. Who are the major groups? Who believes what? And how to best reach out? So without further ado, Sar Shaharat, great to have you back on the air.
Greetings to you, Michael. How are you?
Doing very well, thank you. Yeah, so that unexpected phone call in the first hour further paved the way for where we are today. So, sir, if you could just paint a picture for us. I know you can get into massive detail, and we'll dig deeper, but the larger overview of the origin of what we know as Hebrew Israelites today, where do you trace it back to, and then which are the principal groups that exist today?
Well, let me start off, Michael, first by giving all glory, honor, and praise to the Holy One of Israel. And I'm thankful for another opportunity to be on. And I just wanted to say this to you very quickly, I've listened to you for many, many years, well over probably, 25 years, possibly. And I just wanted to say that the work that you have done in Messianic prophecy and answering objections to the Messiah of Israel have been phenomenal. And I just wanted to say that to you. And I'm not saying, I know that there may be Hebrew Israelites that says, there he goes. He's trying to, pandering, but that's not the case. I thank you for having me on again. And I just wanted to say that your work has been very meaningful. So I wouldn't come
thank
on
you.
This platform if I didn't believe that you were a person that was about digging deeper and being able to grapple with difficult content and subject matter. Now, as far as the origin of these groups, I would direct everyone back to the first show that we did September the 8th, because I got really in depth about some of the information. But what happened is there were authentic West African, Northwest African Jews who ended up in America through various means and began to hand down this oral tradition of being Jews historically, and it filtered heavily into the African American community, especially around the late 1800s, early 1900s. You see this tradition beginning to grow in pockets throughout the South, and then it travels in the early 1900s to the North, to areas like Philadelphia and eventually New York. But what happens is, as these congregations, these authentic Black Jewish congregations are established, it's difficult because when you are a person of color and you identify because of your community or where you live with people who tend to look similar to you in skin and phenotype, there's this tendency for you to harmonize. And so then there may be people that are Hamitic, African, that begin to fellowship with this authentic community. And then what begins to happen is this mixture. So this doctrine goes out amongst all of the people saying, well, if you're black in general, then you, all black people are Jews. Mm. And it was never intended to be that way. But as you know, that African-American people were robbed of their history, their culture, their language when brought to this country through the process of what Dr. John Hope Franklin calls this peculiar institution. And so therefore, looking for something, yearning for something, began to cleave heavily to this early Israelite movement or Black Jewish movement. And so increasingly the rhetoric becomes more abashing, more blatant, more hurtful and hateful, because the 1940s, 50s, and 60s see the rise of many Black organizations, some like the Nation of Islam, et cetera, that begin to really take a harsh stance against white America. And these people who were a part of this early Israelite movement, some of them who may not be physical Israelites themselves, began to take on the same adaptation that the white man is wicked, the white man's evil, look at how he's oppressing us, and he doesn't want us to know about our true heritage. And of course, in times of oppression, themes of nationalism grow and are accepted widely. And we see that throughout history. So a school is established in New York City in Harlem. It's called the Commandment Keepers, or the House of Prayer for the Nations, under a man who's called Rabbi Wentworth Matthew, an authentic West African Jew from West Africa by way of the Caribbean. And a man joins his group by the name of Eber Ben Yoman, or he's called Abba Bivens. His name was Bivens. When he joins the group, he starts to take on this nationalistic tendency, and he breaks off from Commandment Keepers because, you know, Rabbi Matthews wanted to create consistency amongst the Jews in New York City, whether they were white, whether they were black, whether they were brown, it didn't matter. He wanted to create an inclusive community, whereas Bivens said, no, no way, this is nationalism. We're the only Jews. That's the only thing that exists. And he begins to preach on the street corners this message. From him, when he dies in the late 60s, he's killed by the Muslims, he has three students. And he has a man named Yaqob, a man named Ariyah, and a man named Mashah, who take over the movement. And they change the name of the school from the Israeli School of Tanakh, and they change it to the Israelite School of Universal Practical Knowledge. Mm. That movement there, Michael, is the centerpiece and crown jewel of what today is known as the Black Hebrew Israelite movement. They're the ones that you see carrying swords, the ones that you see with the with all of the, like, the metal and chains and the leather garments that look strange. And they're the ones who go on the street corners and curse at people. If you're not black and you're not, as they say, from a so-called Negro origin, then your missile food, you're going to be destroyed. And when the Black Christ comes, he's going to put you all in slavery.
Yeah, what an extraordinary exposition. And I appreciate the streamlined summary, sir. When you talk about the origins and how people who weren't originally from an African Jewish community or an authentic Black Jewish community now take on the identity, it reminded me of people who are not actually of a certain skin color or not actually of a certain gender, and then they begin to identify. They tend to overcompensate, and they tend to take on artificial aspects because it's not really who they are. And right. This is what's happened here. And then when you mention the oppression, the nationalism, so of course this is a pushback. So at what point then would you say that the predominant number of those involved in the movement were no longer authentically of Jewish origin?
That's difficult to say, Michael, because, you know, I don't know everybody's personal DNA. You know what I mean? And I don't want to be involved in saying who is or who is not a Jew, because I know that I have brothers and sisters that have attempted to make Aliyah, and in doing so, some were accepted, some were rejected, and sometimes it was just based on skin color alone, of whether or not there was a deeper, examination of their backgrounds and requests for parental records and marriage documents, et cetera, whereas some, you know, didn't receive that same type of treatment.
Tell you what, we'll come back on the other side of the break, but I understand the care with which you're asking it, and of course it's a broad question asked, but let's reapproach this from another angle. But I appreciate your expertise and the insight that you're giving us on this important movement that we need to address.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
My guest, Sar Sharat Masiyahu, is a black Jew and a follower of Yeshua, Jesus, the Messiah. He has over 19 years of successful experience as a history, social science instructor, and instructional coach. And is an expert in what we know as the Black Hebrew Israelites, their origins, their development, their beliefs. We're going to talk about how to reach out as well. Right before the break, as you had sketched out for us the origins of these groups coming out of original African Jewish congregations that then merged with the surrounding Black American population and then took on kind of an ultra nationalism and things like this, and even anti-white sentiments along the way. When did belief in Jesus on some level become part of this movement?
I want to answer that question, Michael, but if I could briefly just touch back on what you had asked me before the break, is that okay?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I live in Virginia, and here there is the black community in the area where I live in the Central Virginia area. There's a massive mixture of culture here, but the predominant culture are Native American and black. And it's a joke amongst black people in America that people say, "Oh, my grandmother's Indian," or whatever. They don't know where that comes from, but that mixture is very strong here in Virginia. And in doing studies and research, over the years, my grandmother having history coming from, being a black descendant of Jews, and also having some Native American ancestry there as well, I went on studies and for many, many years, tracing and looking at history. And one thing I saw was that, you know, Thomas Jefferson makes a statement about the Indians in Virginia, and he says that, you know, during his time period, that there were no more pure Indians left in Virginia, that they all had been mixed with Negro blood. Now, I know of several chiefs here that are in the area, and there's a chief who's the leader of one dominant tribe here in Central Virginia, who, because of the way that race was done during his time in the 50s and 40s, his sister was slated to go to a colored school because of her skin color, whereas he was slated to go to a white school. They're both Indian, Native American people, but he couldn't go to the same school with his sister because of skin color. And there was a man in Virginia named Walter Plecker, an evil man who also worked with Hitler and gave Hitler some ideas in eugenics, who made it so that if a child was born in Virginia that was of Native ancestry, the certificate was to be stamped either colored or it was to be stamped white. There was no opportunity to put mulatto or mixture or Indian, because he was trying to create this society of black and white. And these are historical facts that anyone who studies the history of Central Virginia will find out about. Now, what does that have to do with the question you asked before? When you say, well, how many people, began to not have this Israelite ancestry genetically, you know, and over what period of time? It's difficult because of what has been done with the records. And because of communities being forced together into one place, so you may have people that are, you know, there's a saying that I hear a lot, my skin folk ain't my kinfolk. And what that means is just because we have the same color skin doesn't mean we have the actual same history or genetic makeup. And so it's very difficult in that regard, and that's why the scripture warns us about getting bogged down in genealogy. So I just wanted to state that, because that's a very real problem here in Virginia, why some of our tribes have not been able to receive federal recognition because of that. Okay, there actually is a tribe here in Virginia, I won't say the name, that on the Constitution it says, if an Indian woman marries a white man, she can remain on the reservation and retain her identity and status as an Indian. If she marries a Negro, she immediately loses her status and has to move off of the reservation. These are
wild
facts. And this is just the world that we live in. You know, so I wanted to answer that part. Now, as far as the messianic piece, it's difficult, Michael, because I know your position, and I know that, you know, in your view, having listened to you for many years, that you can move within the Christian and Jewish community, you know, quite seamlessly, and you don't really see the major disconnect. But when you are a Jew that's of color, an Israelite of that origin, I'm not talking about black Hebrew Israelites.
What
ends up happening is it's almost as if we have to be more stringent of Torah, more stringent of halakha, more stringent of these things. And so within the community, you know, terminologies like Jesus and things of that nature are not, you know, accepted terminologies. Though I understand you on a scholarly level are saying, well, we're just talking about differences of translation and transliterations of names. But as you know, in the Jewish community in general, that name is not even, you know, to be spoken. Like you'd be politely asked to not say that if you were in a traditional Jewish synagogue, regardless of whether it was black or white. So that was a battle in the early days, because Matthew, who had learned of this tradition coming from the west coast of Africa and bringing it here, was not the first. As a matter of fact, the very first black Jewish congregations are right here in the Virginia area. And I did research on this at Liberty University. They asked me to come and to actually speak on that to the graduate symposium, I think a year or two ago. That organization still stands, and the gentleman that that started that movement, William Crowdy, his one of his great grandsons, I think it is today, is the chief rabbi of their particular group of synagogues. He was messianic, and the earliest people to bring the tradition of Israelite identity of Jewish identity were messianic, strangely enough. Now, one of the early pioneers made the statement, and he said, I don't know what the Messiah's true name is. He said, but I know it's not Jesus, you know, as far as in its actual Hebrew origin.
Right, right.
And so when he would sign his documents, he would actually sign it with the Yod Heh Vav Shin Ayin. He would sign it that way, the full name, you know, as we know as Yehoshua, right? He would sign it that way and put that at the bottom of his correspondence. So it's a very unique piece. And let me say this, Michael, this is very interesting too. It gets to be very complicated because the Hebrew Israelite movement looks to some of these early black Jews as their heroes and as their founders. It's so strange. But this is a new phenomenon, Michael, because I remember going with friends of mine to challenge the black Hebrew Israelites that were in New York City on this place, 1941 Madison Avenue. The FBI just raided there like last month.
Tell you what, we got the music playing. We'll start with your reaching out to black Hebrew Israelites in New York City when we come back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown.
your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
In the early 1990s, I was getting ready to do an outreach for Times Square Church, Pastor Don Wilkerson, Pastor David Wilkerson. And during the day, I was walking down the street with a colleague. He was also white. We're also Jewish believers in Jesus. Walking down the street and encountered every kind of group doing outreach and preaching and doing whatever they were doing. And then heard one group with a loudspeaker, and I came up to them, and they these very interesting outfits, kind of looked like a combination between ancient biblical garb and Star Trek, and guards with these giant clubs. And I realized they were Black Hebrew Israelites. I just heard a little bit about them. And I began to preach in the midst of them and say that we both meet at the foot of the cross, and white and black, we need each other, etc. And they began to incite the crowd, which happened to be all black, and they began to chant, death to America, death to the white man. It was quite an interesting confrontation. These groups are to be totally distinguished from black Jews, Jews who came from Western Africa, who maintained a heritage of Judaism, many of whom were followers of Yeshua, the Messiah, when they came to America. Ultimately, it's out of those groups that the Black Hebrew Israelites arose. My guest saw Shaharat Maaseiah, who is an expert on these subjects, himself a Black Jew and a believer in the Messiah. And he also went to speak to a group of Black Hebrew Israelites in New York City. Welcome, sir, to the broadcast. Tell us about your encounter in New York City.
Yes, sir. A few friends of mine, we said, you know, we're going to go and see what these guys are talking about up here. These gentlemen, we're going to see what they're talking about up here in Harlem. So we went to this place, and it's called the. And I want you to listen to this, because this doesn't sound like a very Hebrew or a very Israelite, you know, name as far as for people that are saying we got to speak the ancient Hebrew and the white man. But the name of their a building is called the Israelite Church of God in Jesus Christ. Sounds like a traditional church, right? So when you get there, they have on the doors, and to the 12 tribes scattered abroad, and then they've got all of the 12 tribes, you know, Judah, Benjamin, Levi, etc. And then they say Judah is the Negroes, and Benjamin is the West Indians. Levi is the Haitians, and, you know, I'm trying to think of these other tribes. Ephraim is the Puerto Ricans. It's very – Gad is the, let's see, the North American Indians, and Reuben is the Seminole Indians. So they've done this –
But no whites. No whites among them, right?
Exactly. No whites. So we go there, and a gentleman comes out. And he's like, what are y'all brothers doing? You know, because we're black men, you know, for all intents and purposes. If we were in the 1950s, we would have been, you know, hosed in the wrong place. You know what I mean?
But
the thing is, we went there, and he said, what are y'all brothers doing? I said, well, we're just here. We did a little videotape. He said, we wanted to see what y'all were about. And he said, and the first thing he says to us, this is his form of outreach, I guess. He said, did you know Christ was a black man? So we start laughing, you know, and we said, we are Jews, we're Israelites. And he was like, oh, well, why aren't you followers of the church? I said, because you guys are heretics. You're not real. You're a cult. And he was like, oh, brother, why would you say that? I said, because you don't, I said, all of this whole message, everything that you're teaching is fraudulent. It came from us. Everything that you have, you took it and you messed with it and you turned it into foolery. And I said, you're not even who you say that you are. So anyway, he says, the truth started here in New York City in 1969. I said, that is foolishness, because that's the year that they started the Israelite school of UPK. So anyway, I said, brother, have you ever heard of... I'm sorry.
Tell you what, we got the music. That means we got a break. This is absolutely intriguing, friends. Here's an authentic black Jew and believer in the Messiah confronting a false black Hebrew Israelite. Oh, a lot more to come. Stay with us.
Send it, Lord. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks again for joining us on this broadcast as we focus in on Black Hebrew Israelites, false beliefs, and we will get to shortly how to reach out and confront. I'm also going to play some audio clips with some pretty vivid stuff happening in one of these communities. My guest, Sar Shaharat Masayahu, a Black Jew and a follower of the Messiah. So checks out as authentic on all of our scales here. So when you reach out to this Black Hebrew Israelite, he says, no, the truth started in New York City, 1969. Tell listeners again what school was founded then that they believe is now the fountainhead of truth and revelation.
The Israelite School of Universal Practical Knowledge. Now, when I said to him, do you know that an ex-enslaved black man named William Crowdy actually established one of the first official black synagogues in 1896, that's way older than y'all. He was like, that's not true. The truth started here in 1969. Now, we have this on tape, Michael. But what happened is I noticed in the last 2 years that they have now been creating charts in which they trace themselves back to Crowdy, and Crowdy's group disavows everything that they're about because Crowdy's first followers as an ex-slave who maintained this tradition— his first followers were white. And so he's diametrically, opposed to everything they stand for. And I just mentioned Crowdy because he's one of the early ones who started to bring this tradition out to the mainstream. So the danger, Michael, is that many in your audience would probably encounter an authentic West African Jew. And because they might term themselves as an Israelite, that's a terminology that we use, and if you go around the world, there are people who utilize that terminology that are not a part of this Black Hebrew Israelite movement. It's just a terminology that's used. They would probably confuse. And I've had people many times when I tell them about my origin, my background, they say, oh, are you part of those guys that are on the street corner and I have to go through this whole, so it
got
becomes
it, got it.
Very, it's very difficult. But I wanted to say that you have some clips. I think it's important, Michael, to get a couple of those clips whenever you're ready. I can comment on them.
Let's do it. We'll play them, and you can comment. We're going to start with clip number 13. We'll play it, and then you can give us the background. Let's go ahead.
When we could take your little white children with them big heads, man, and them blonde, and that blonde hair, and them blue eyes, and smash their head against the walls, man. I want to catch one coming out the womb and rip him from his feet and take him and smash his head against the floor, man. Your people did it to my people, man. Your people did it to my people. I can't wait to take one of them devil babies, man, and smash his head in. I'm going to stump it, man. I bought a new pair of boots I ain't never worn yet, man.
All right, wow. One more clip. One more clip, and then you can weigh in. Let's go to the next one, Philip, clip number 14. This is pretty intense stuff, but we'll get the background from our guest right after we listen. Go ahead.
Y'all did it to our people. We're so strange about it. We're so strange about it, man, that we want to get revenge for our ancestors. The white man wanted revenge for Bin Laden blowing up the World Trade Center. The white man wanted revenge for that. Why can't we want revenge for our people?
All right, Sashara, what does that have to do with Black Hebrew Israelites?
Well, that is the group, the Israelite School of UPK, in their modern origin. In 1995, the group split, and it turned into two groups, which was the ISUPK, which they later became the Israelite Church of UPK in order to deal with tax situations. The other group was called House of David. And these two groups have splintered and splintered and splintered until, those original groups are just, in the background. And now these newer groups are coming out, and it is blazing across America. Now, Michael, you heard the hate, right? Now, we know that the scripture says vengeance is mine, right? Saith Yahweh. So how is it that these gentlemen can preach this kind of message? Well, they use what they call precepts And so they go to the book of Revelation where it says, you know, he that leads into captivity shall go into captivity, etc. And they try to use that as the basis for their doctrine, that because black people in America were oppressed and were enslaved and were ill-treated, that we're going to have our get back. And we're going to enslave white people, the Chinese, and the Arabs, and all of the groups of people who had anything to do with the Middle Passage, Triangular Trade, and the African slave trade. And you're going to be slaves, those of you who are not killed in the missiles, because the nuclear missiles are going to come, America's going to be destroyed, and then this black Christ figure is going to come, and he's going to kill the Pope, and he's going to kill all the religious leaders, and set up the black Hebrew Israelites as the rightful rulers and heirs of the kingdom of heaven on earth. Now, that sounds far-fetched. Some of them even teach, groups like GMS, say that when this black Christ figure comes, we're going to have special powers, and we're going to be able to shoot rays out of our eyes. We're going to be able to fly. We're going to have the strength of 50 men and make Samson look like child's play. And it sounds crazy. But, you know, one of the things that I think we need to be mindful of is that to call someone crazy and then leave it there is dismissive. It doesn't deal with what's behind the narrative. And I think that's the difficult part, Michael, when we talk about why black people in America are flooding to these movements in droves. We have to address what's behind the narrative. So as we see in modern times, when police officers, you know, I saw one myself where there was a black man. He was on the ground. He had his arms straight up in the air. He was telling the police officers that there was an autistic child next to him, that wasn't a gun, it's a Lego, and he was saying, you know, don't shoot, don't shoot, he's autistic. The police officer shot the black man, who's laying on his back, by the way, with his arms straight up in the air, and when the black man says to the police officer, you shot me, why did you shoot me? The police officer responds, I don't know. Now, I understand as a person that deals with trauma and things of that nature from my training as an educator in years back, I know what can happen to the brain and to the mind and what happens, and that doesn't make any excuse for either way that a person might interpret the situation. But to the mind of an oppressed black person, they see this visual many times, and what ends up happening is there are whites in the community who have this this view of get over it, right? I've even heard white talking about the Holocaust, and this just happened in the previous week, where a white gentleman was saying that, you know, there was a Jewish brother who was talking about the Holocaust and how he's weary of when he hears people speaking German, and his response was, get over it. So, you know, it's very difficult because, as Glenn Singleton says in his book, Courageous Conversations About Race, we enter into conversations either from an intellectual position, from a moral position, or from an emotional position. And when we have the dialogue about race, a lot of times, because we don't understand the cultural niches of the in which the people that we're discussing, we don't see the viewpoint of the other. So the empathy mm-hmm. lacks. And that's mm-hmm. the kind of thing that fuels the black Hebrew Israelites. And so the caller you had earlier, I was telling my wife in the first part of the show, is probably a wonderful gentleman who studies the scripture, but he studied some things and he thinks he sees and understands some things. And his interaction with you, the way it went, he's going to walk away saying, there's another white man hiding the truth. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, of course.
And even though I put myself in a very unique position coming on to talk about this, I think that it's people like him that I'm meant to help. And Michael, I have to say that it has been a blessing because I have been able to help so many Hebrew Israelites. I mean, even in just the past couple of weeks, bringing them to an authentic relationship with the Messiah of Israel. So, it's one of those things where it's like I was made the person that I was made to be. I grew up in the community that I grew up in order to have the skills that I have to do this work. And I just wanted to, you know, to bring that out, you know, that it's difficult because when we have officials and local government who can tweet about the first lady being a monkey in a dress, you see, these are the kinds of things that Hebrew Israelites hear, and it fuels that kind of hate. And I'll say one more thing, Michael. There's a book that came out, Dr. Timothy Tyson, who is one of the lead scholars and researchers at Duke University. He came out with a book, and he interviewed a lady named Carolyn Bryant. Her name's Carolyn.
Got to jump in again. Got to jump in again. But here, one takeaway to all of my white listening friends or non-black listening friends. We must understand how the world looks to many black Americans if we are going to have a sympathetic and empathetic outreach. We must. Give us strength to
always do what's right. It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I know y'all probably looking at me like, oh, is that the actor dude? The dude from the movies? This is not a scam. This is not if you know my background, I grew up in scripture. I grew up in the Christian church, just like most of us did. And when I came into the truth, I realized that the Most High is about to make a big move in this earth.
That is Brandon T. Jackson, stand-up comedian, rapper, actor, writer, announcing he's, quote, an Israelite. My guest, Sar Shaharat Masiyahu. I wish we had a few more hours to discuss what we're talking about, the Black Hebrew Israelite movement, separating that from authentic Black Jews who believe in the Messiah. And we want to take these last minutes to talk about how we can reach out lovingly to those who identify as Black Hebrew Israelites. You were saying something right before the break, sir, so we go back to you, and then we want to take the last few minutes just with whatever practical wisdom you can give us.
Yes, sir. And I think that, first of all, Michael, with you allowing a segment like this to take place is a first step, right? Because, you know, if there are historical pieces and truth that's brought out, they would know that I'm not attempting to destroy them. You know what I mean? In other words,
you're not a white devil.
Right. So my objective is to try to bring them to understanding why they are where they are. Now I'll just say this. A lot of times there are nuances in how people that are not black, and see, it's interesting because, again, of where I was raised and what I was raised. You're talking about a black Jew who's raised in an inner city environment. That's very unique. You know what I mean?
Yes, sir.
So I understand a lot of what goes on. And for example, when you were talking with the caller earlier, I just wanted to go back to that. You made the statement because he said, you know, all the Jews are black and you're a Khazar. And that's one of the things they teach about this Khazarian piece. But you said, no, the ancient Jews were not black. But then you said, but we know that the ancient Jews were not European. Now, see, you're saying that, and I know you don't mean anything in your heart there, but to a Hebrew Israelite, they're listening and saying, well, why would you say the ancient Jews weren't black as far as skin color, but then you didn't say they weren't white, you said they weren't European. So they're looking for that. So when we deal with them, and I just want to give some practical steps, first of all, you know, the same way in which you would approach an Orthodox Jew, right, where you would say, okay, there's certain terminologies I want to just be wise about. You know, I want to make sure that I don't say anything that's of offense because you're what? Truly trying to reach them, have that conversation, and build that rapport. Even though the Hebrew Israelites, some of those groups, can be some of the most, you know, racist and dastardly fellows in the world, all of them are not that way. And as a matter of fact, there are some, you know, the community has really been mixed up. Michael, you probably don't even know that Michelle Obama's first cousin is Rabbi Capers Fune, who actually sits on the Chicago Board of Rabbis.
He
has a traditional Jewish synagogue in Chicago, one of the oldest from like 1908. And there are Jewish people, white Jewish brothers who go there for services on Shabbat. But there are also Hebrew Israelites who come to his services. And he opens the door for them and attempts to get them to understand in a more streamlined way. So we have to sometimes not be afraid you know, to be able to empathize and to understand. And some of your callers, Michael, who've called in on this subject matter have shown that they really want to get an understanding. They want to know more so that they can do something to help, as opposed to saying, look at these crazy black guys making fun of them and their possible lack of education and things of that nature. The first step is the empathy. And so you also want to be sure that, you know, you don't come with the Christianity piece from the traditional, because they're already tuned in to say Christianity, the white man's religion, et cetera. The Christians who are really having, you know, headway are those who are more like urban Christians that understand the environment in which they're dealing, and they go to the roots of the origin of Christianity and show places like Ethiopia, one of the oldest Christian nations in the world that still stands, things of that nature, to try and get them to see that, hey, the New Covenant manuscript, the Torah, the Tanakh, these are beautiful writings, and there's more to them that reveals who the Messiah is and what he wants to do in your life and to change you and make you into a new creature. And that's what you need to glean from the text, as opposed to nationalism, race baiting, and race hating. And so you have to have that view when you're speaking with them.
Right. So the empathy, especially as a white person. And by the way, you know, that's something that my callers have greatly helped me with over the years from different backgrounds, because their life experience perspective is different. So as listen, you know, we've got to listen. That's what I always say. Sit down with someone when we've got racial tension or ethnic tension in America and say to them, tell me what the world looks like through your eyes, and let me listen, not defend or argue. Let me listen, then let me share through my eyes, so we can reveal each other's blind spots, which we just have by upbringing, even in our most sincere moments. And then, so empathy, understanding, especially if you're white and interacting with a black Hebrew Israelite. And then secondly, we don't just come with a traditional church Christian message, which they're already rejecting. Obviously, the better we understand Jewish roots. And then we got 2 minutes left. What else would you tell us?
You know, I just want to say, Michael, that my appeal goes out to all of those who are thinking about joining the Hebrew Israelite movement. Those who think that there's, you know, simply just a major cover up or et cetera, I'd say if you dig deeper and you take the time to really pray, Proverbs chapter 3, verses 5 through 7, if you trust in the Creator with all your heart and don't lean to your own understanding, acknowledge Him in the way that you're about to go. Really seek the Messiah of Israel. As I said, Michael, you know, we use the pronunciation Yahusha. Those who understand Yehoshua, Yeshua, the Messiah of Israel, you need to seek Him with all your heart. And I want to speak to every Hebrew Israelite that's listening, because, Michael, they listen to your show. They know you very well, and they are listening right now. And I want to say to you, brother and sister, there is no time to spend in hating people. There's no time to spend in preaching hate. Go back to the doctrine and the teaching of the apostles. What is it that they preached around the world? It was the death, the burial, and the resurrection of the only holy Messiah, and His coming into your life, filling you with His Spirit of truth, changing your heart so that you can impact the planet and you can dispel lies through Him, not through all of your internet research and Twittering and Facebooking, but you can impact the world with truth and dispel myths by allowing He who is truth to come and dwell in your hearts. I invite you to let Him in today.
Let us work together, my dear brother, to reach as many of these precious souls for whom Jesus died, for whom Yeshua died. I appreciate your heart. I appreciate your expertise and your burden. And together, let's make a difference here. Thank you for educating our audience. And for all Black Hebrew Israelites listening, if you are listening, let's talk. Give me a call, and let's talk. Thanks once more. My guest, Sar Shaharat Maaseyahu. My bottom line today, it is the message of liberating, transforming love. That's the message we carry as followers of the Messiah.